You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week. It's the end of Teacher Appreciation Week, which is pretty hilarious, considering this year we've all been homeschooling our kids for the last 8 weeks. It's also Mother's Day on Sunday, and our spouses can't go shopping unless it's online shopping, and God knows what they'll come up with. And then Monday's my wedding anniversary. So I just feel like at this point, I should be able to just sit out in the driveway with a cigarette in my mouth and a bottle of whiskey and just call it a day. But I am absolutely wishing you guys a happy Mother's Day if you are at home now with your kids homeschooling. But I also wanted to just say that I'm hoping you're all hanging in there. It seems like there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm just so grateful for all of you listening to the show. And I'm also grateful for so many production companies and television networks that have put such great shows out there and have given us such a great distraction over these very bizarre times. One of the great documentaries that I saw a couple weeks ago, I've mentioned it. It's now airing on HBO. It's called Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind. It explores actor Natalie Wood's life and career through the unique perspective of her daughter, who is her absolute doppelganger. You know, sometimes you see kids and you're like, wow, you look just like your mom. This one, you're like, you are a carbon copy. So her name is Natasha Gregson-Wagner and others who knew her best. The film features previously unseen home movies, which, you know, I love. Photographs, diary entries, letters that she had written for magazines that had never been published, and artifacts, as well as intimate interviews with her friends, family, co-stars, and colleagues, re-examining her personal and professional triumphs and challenges, which have often been overshadowed by her tragic death at age 43, which is like unbelievable. I had no idea she died that young. And the most surprising part about it is Robert Wagner is interviewed at the end of it. Of course, he's been interviewed by a stepdaughter, but it is the first time in a long time that you will hear him really talk about what happened the night that she died. It is fascinating. I think that you guys will all love it. And I don't know about you, if you've already seen it, but I cannot stop crying when I watch it. It's so moving, so beautiful, and so heartbreaking for those kids that were left behind. So again, it's called Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind. Now, the top of the episode, I have an interview with one of my great friends, Ronnie Karam. He co-hosts Watch What Crappens and Rose Pricks Podcast. He's one of my friends that if I see something ridiculous, I'll text him, and that can be unrelated to television. But he's also one of the greatest people to text while you're watching a TV show. And for example, this week we were texting with Matt Maher from 90 Day Gays. The three of us about the contestants on The Bachelor, Listen to Your Heart. And I almost took my phone and threw it across the room because I was laughing so hard. Now, those to me are the greatest moments in life. When you are laughing so hard that you want to take your phone and just chuck it across the room because you have no idea what else to do. So I asked him to just talk about some of the shows that we're watching, which include, as I mentioned, Bachelor, Listen to Your Heart, but also Shaws of Sunset, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and Real Housewives of New York. Now, tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing Nima from Shaws of Sunset, and I can't wait to talk to him because that show really is perplexing to me. I don't understand why they all want to participate in a show while they all clearly loathe one another. I mean, at some point, are you like, is this worth our time and aggravation? So that's just an aside. That's going to be in the next episode. But my God, Ronnie makes me laugh so hard. And so many people have said that when he does episodes with me, that they find themselves in places, public places like a plane, and they are laughing so hard too, along with us, to the point where people look at them like they're going into convulsions. And I say this, that's what it's like when you talk to him in your normal day life. So I know all of you have friends out there that are just the same, but Ronnie, oh my God, what a treasure. So, and by the way, may I also say, the podcast world is great. Almost everyone that you meet in the podcasting world, my experience is so funny and so collaborative. And Ronnie is no exception. When I first started my show 4 years ago, he was one of the first people that jumped up and said, let's do something together. So you've got to listen to his shows because he's so talented, as is his co-host, Ben, and Stephanie Wilder, who is his Rose Pricks podcast host. Just best of the best. So funny. So I'm really excited about this episode. So here we go. Ronnie Karam is a dear friend. He is the co-host of Watch What Crappens and Rose Pricks podcast. He watches a ton of television shows like myself. And we find ourselves often texting each other about glorious and hellacious shows. And I have a few questions about some shows that we've been watching. Ronnie, welcome back to the show.
Well, hello. Nice to talk to you. Hearing those birds tweeting in the background, you're like Cinderella over there.
Well, the first question out of the gate is about Bachelor, Listen to Your Heart, which we know is like The Bachelor, but a bunch of people who were rejects from the Bachelor pool who may have or may not have been in a band at some point who are on the show to find love and possibly get a recording deal from and whatever label still exists. When you were learning about this show, were you excited or did you think this is going to be a shit show? And for that, I am excited.
I was not excited because I just looked at it as like, oh God, another 2 hour show. Like, why do we need another 2 hour show, Bachelor? And then I watched it and I love it because I'm a big musical queen. You know, I love a musical. I don't care if you're singing in a commercial, I will cry. Okay, like that commercial where it's all the hospital workers. There's one with hospital commercials. I mean, they're singing like Stand By Me or something. And then there's one of the Walmart workers singing Lean On Me. I don't know. I think those are the songs. Anyway, it's all these workers singing. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm crying at a Walmart commercial. Ooh. So yeah, I love it.
Okay, every time Chris Harrison leaves the scene, he warns contestants to just remember to listen to your heart, which is based on the Roxette hit from the Pretty Woman soundtrack. How does Chris Harrison not laugh during these weird moments? And would it have been different if they went with something like The Bachelor One Thing by One Direction? Something's got to give now, guys, because I'm dying just to make you see that I need you here with me now because you've got that one thing.
Or I Like Big Butts. You know, like how different would this show be? You know, song choice. It's everything, guys. Song choice is everything. I like that Harrison is in rock clothes now because he's like, hey, this is a show about rock and roll. So I'm not just going to wear blue suits today. I'm going to wear a denim shirt. Oh, yeah. Denim, guys.
So does that mean in the finale, he's going to wear leather pants, a bunch of rings on every finger, and have like a lightning bolt, like fake tattoo on his cheek?
I hope so. That would be amazing.
Now, some of the questions that the contestants are questionable. Is Natasha a plant?
Who cares? She's a plant that can sing. She's the Audrey too, as far as I'm concerned, from Little Shop of Horrors. She is a singing plant, and I love her. Okay? Just don't eat Ellen Green, please. That's all I ask.
Do you think that she probably would have been better on Bret Michaels' Rock of Love?
Well, she's more talented than he is, that's for damn sure. So she probably wouldn't have made it on that one. She is definitely like a Real Housewife of Westlake Village type that somehow got on this show. But God, she's so good.
Okay, speaking of housewives, is Julia secretly a housewife, and is she going crazy?
Is she a housewife? And which one? Oh, Julia, the crazy villain one. Okay. Yeah, it's not on very much, and they're just all general white people. So some, I have to like think a minute for their name. I'm like, is that Michelle? Julia? Sarah? Okay, so Julia. Yes, Julia's insane. Did you see someone posted on our Facebook for Rose Pricks or something, her post on her website, like her singer website? It is so obnoxious. She's such an asshole of a person. I'm sorry, am I allowed to say that on this show?
Of course you can. Of course.
She's a monster of a person there. That's better. And she's just really gross. She's like, talk about the girl next door.
Oh.
She reinvents the girl next door for the new age.
Oh my gosh.
She's done acting jobs. Sure, she's been on auditions. That's just par for the course as an entertainer. I'm like, oh, blah. She's terrible. I'm so glad she got what she deserved, and everybody hates her now. And now she's coming out being like, well, you know, it was edited. I don't like how I was portrayed. Yeah, I don't like how you were portrayed either. Okay, call God. Okay, God is the ultimate editor. He gave you that to work with. Call him.
Does Brandon care about any of these women?
Brandon. Okay, hold on. Dun. Oh, Gary Busey teeth. Okay, Brandon. Brandon is, as far as Brandon to me, is just like a divorced dad that never sees the kids.
Oh, but the yes. Mad
that he's not invited to the wedding, you know? Yes. And then he'll be like, babe, what's your dad, babe? Ew. And then tries to get money from the new husband. Ugh.
Oh my God, yes. Okay. Is Matt making Rudy crazy, or did she barely pass the casting psych evaluation?
I don't think that psych evaluation is even real. I don't believe it. I watched Unreal as well, so I know about that, but I don't think that that's real. Rudy's insane, but she's also insanely talented. I think he's very talented too, but he's basically like, okay, you're crazy, but the only way I'm going to stay on this show and win it is with you because you're the most talented. So I'll let you watch me work out, you know, half naked or whatever.
By the way, I don't think there's any workout equipment there, much like The Bachelor. So, and they don't all seem like they're the most super fit people. So what would be a typical workout for someone like Matt? Like what? Would
well, we
he
saw
just
it this
like
week, right? He was jumping doing pull-ups from the banisters and like lifting himself, and then like lifting heavy things outside that were shaped like kettlebells, but weren't. You know all those weird pieces of furniture in Hollywood. It's just like, oh, it's a rustic iron horseshoe that's bigger than a giant head. Like he just lifts anything he can. Rawr, that guy.
Does it help or hinder you if you get in the hot tub the first night of the show?
Well, I mean, it seems extremely dangerous, you know, just because of the petri dish, but I don't know if it helps or hinders you because this show's different. Well, it's not different at all, by the way, but you never know what season you're on with The Bachelor, because sometimes you make out on the first night and people are like, you're a slut, and then sometimes you make out on the first night and people are like, wow, she's really making an effort. You
right.
know? And that other girl's a prudish ice queen because she wouldn't even kiss him. So who knows?
Why is Rachel judging them? Why did they choose for her to come on with her new husband? Is she qualified to be judging a singing contest?
Well, the great thing is that they're not even judging the singing. They're judging the chemistry. We're judging your relationship. She's like, God. Wow, you were just like me and Brian, so I liked this song. What does that mean? You were just like, what does that even mean? You looked at him the same way that I looked at Brian, so you guys did a good job. I didn't like your chemistry, so that sounded like karaoke. Like, screw you, lady.
Exactly. And is Jason Mraz happy he did this, or is this something that he hopes no one remembers?
Jason Mraz should be mortified. But he was wearing that big velvet hat, so you just wonder where the limits are. You know, it's like, can he feel mortified? Like, I thought there was more to Jason Mraz than this, but, you know, he got what he deserved sitting next to JoJo, you know.
True. Like,
congrats, you win.
Shaws of Sunset. Is the show working when everyone hates each other?
I think it's a better season than most. They've had more good episodes than most seasons of late. But no, this whole, they're like a housewife show where they suffer when people are like, we're not going to shoot with them. Let's just make a whole season where we don't shoot with MJ. You know,
yes.
People watch it for MJ. They don't watch it to see Gigi try to get pregnant. Like nobody right. cares. Like right. nobody cares about watching Gigi eat pineapple with her mother. You know,
what really happened between Reza and MJ? Is it really about things that go on behind the show, or is this truly about something that's on the show? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's usually about appearance fees. Someone didn't get enough money from a paid post.
Well, she was apparently asking for more money, which they didn't like, because that was holding up the show. And I think that, and I don't know, this is just all me guessing. This is me guessing and reading internet stuff. I don't really have a back channel for that, but
yeah, but that's real news to us, so that works.
Yeah. Yeah, the internet, Sachal Medea, the nastiest housewife out there. But yeah, she apparently wanted more money and was holding up shooting, and they were already kind of on the bubble because they're the Shaws of Sunset, like, who cares?
Right.
And so that was harming it, and then everybody got pissed at her and was like, fine, we just won't shoot with her. You know, and yeah. Then they did that while she was pregnant, didn't go and see her and all of that stuff. So she got mad, but she didn't really get that mad. So I don't know, but it's really not fun to watch.
Also, really, did Tommy do that much damage in the backyard? I mean, I saw footage just like you did. I don't know. Just sweep a couple pots up and go back to Lowe's and get some. Is it that big of a deal?
Well, it doesn't look like, it looks like in the neighborhood that he's in, that could just happen anyway. I mean, let's be honest. It's not like he's in Bel Air, you know? Every time he has people over, it's like, hello, come into my home. I'm like, is this inside your house or is this just like some hole in the corner of the street that people disappear into? It's weird.
Well, and then he's like, we're not afraid if he's going to come back with a gun or with a knife. I'm like, what are you talking about? It seems like a gross exaggeration. But is Adam the problem? I mean, he kind of seems like he's a real
problem. Well, Reza's a horrible human being. He's an awful, 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 horrible, nasty queen. He always has been. He's turned against everybody that he claims to be friends with on that show. He's a vile, disgusting human being. Like, he's one of my most hated people that I watch on these shows. I just hate the guy. He's so horrible to everyone. He treats the women especially like crap. So he's awful. So yes, of course, Adam's awful just because when you marry someone that awful, you're awful as well, you know?
That's
and
true.
Adam's one of
That's
those true. Who likes to pretend he's quiet and so nice and this and that, but he's a disgusting monster. Now, do I think he was cheating? No, I think they probably have an open relationship and that's just how they roll. But yeah, he's trying to act like this huge victim. You're not a victim.
Okay, now this is a super speed round. Speaking of open relationships, Denise and Aaron, is hooking up with Brandy that big of a deal?
No, I think that she's an idiot for hooking up with Brandy. Like, Brandy's not going to use that. I mean, come on.
Right. And what is wrong with Aaron? And are they being followed? And if they are being followed, is it by Scientologists, paparazzi, or people who work at pharmaceutical companies?
I don't think that the pharmaceutical companies are really terrified of a machine. That machine that we saw on the show. I really don't call me crazy, but I don't think that. Also, I don't think that they would follow you around. Like, what do they say? It's like, oh my God, guys, they went to Whole Foods. You just put the machine on national television. They know where you live. It's a matter of public record. You're not doing anything super secret that they need to spy on you for. Come on.
Yeah, so I'm like, quick, they're going to Rite Aid. Get in the car. So true. Okay, is Sutton living on another planet or is she perfect for this show?
Oh my God, she's totally perfect
for it. I think so too. God, I think she's perfect.
Perfect for it.
Yes.
They hired another older, rich lady who's way richer than them and snottier than them and looks down on them all. And Erica especially seems like she's going to be triggered because that was her, you know, Vanderpump really made her crazy.
Okay.
So I think it was great casting. I think it's the best thing they've done in a long time.
Garcelle too. Was great. I think so too.
And thank God, because that show has really been struggling. If that show's been a struggle for the past couple of years. So good job.
And you should know. Yeah, because you're covering it. Why does Kyle get crazy when Kim is mentioned? Why does she go from 1 to 12? You mention Kim and she loses her mind. What is the real reason?
Because she knows, because she gets in trouble and gets cut out of Kathy Hilton's parties and weddings. And Kyle is a total hanger-on. She's always been. And so she doesn't want to get cut out of that again. And she knows that when Rinna brings it up, she's purposely doing it to make Kyle crazy. Because the only way to stand up for her is to diss Kim. And then that's going to get her disinvited places. And she knows that Rinna is just messing with her when she does that to try and bring her down.
Is Bethany pissed that she's not on the show anymore? Will she try to come back?
Yes, she's pissed. I think it depends on how her other shows do, if she'll come back. Because we haven't seen how those are going to do yet. These HBO Max, that HBO Max one's coming out. And then I think she's got another couple in the works. And they're all just ripoffs of other shows, obviously. But I don't know. I think it depends on her thirst level. You know, she's got to have a certain amount of attention. And let's see if she gets it from these new shows. But yeah, I think she's pissed. I mean, she gave an interview the same week that the show premiered. Like,
well, that show was a slap in the face to me. I mean, seriously, like the first show that was just a slap in the face.
Because they were reacting to her quitting like a day before filming began and trying to take the whole show. She's such an a-hole, that lady.
Is life still a cabaret for Luann in quarantine?
Oh, you know, Luann's not in quarantine. Luann is one of these people who's like, oh, stay safe, everybody. And then you pull back and she's like, you know, on the shoulders of like 30 male hookers on a boat somewhere.
Oh, God.
You know it.
And on New York, who knows where the most of the bodies are buried? Like, who's the one that's like, you piss them off and we're just moments away from them divulging all the information about all of them?
Probably Dorinda, but I feel like Dorinda would have already, I feel like all of them would have divulged all that information already, don't you?
Maybe. And the last question is, what's wrong with Dorinda?
Well, besides like severe alcoholism and possible drug use, I don't know, but I like her. I think she's really hilarious and stuff, but I think her musings on alcoholism are hilarious. Like the season when she's like, you know, I don't think Luann's an alcoholic. I mean, I've been drinking with her for years. Okay. I liked her, and people go up and down with her. She can be more vile some years than others, but I think she's pretty solid as a housewife.
I say you make up a vile-o-meter, which just kind of ranks people, you know, season to season. All right, you're a busy guy. You have lots of shows to recap. Tell everybody where they can listen to your shows.
Watch What Crappens is for Bravo shows, and Rose Pricks is Bachelor-related stuff. And right now we're doing Bachelor-elated. Right now we're doing Too Hot to Handle on our Patreon for you want to see me triggered? Oh my God. Too hot to handle. Wow.
Wow is right. That is quite a show. Listen, I love you to the moon and back. My love and blessings to you in Texas and to Ben. And I will be texting you soon.
Thank you. Love you long time. Have a good one, lady.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
In 1981, Natalie Wood drowned off the coast of Catalina Island in California while she was on a trip with her husband, actor Robert Wagner, and friend and co-star Christopher Walken. 4 decades later, there are still rumors and theories about how she died. It's also been the subject of a really popular podcast. Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind on HBO features interviews from Wood's family, as well as friends such as Robert Redford and Mia Farrow. It is mainly a portrait of Wood by her daughter, Natasha Gregson Wagner, who has said, "The intense focus on her death often overshadows her life's work, and who she was as a person, particularly as a mother. Emily Yar is an entertainment reporter for The Washington Post. Emily, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
How familiar were you with Natalie Wood before watching this?
I feel like I had read a lot about her just because it seems like every year on the anniversary of her death, there are new stories about her, and people are always just continuously interested. So I had read a lot about her, but I had never really seen her life kind of laid out in a linear way, like it was in the HBO documentary. So I feel like I learned a lot.
Did you cry as much as I did?
I mean, it was, yeah, it was emotional, you know, with her daughters being interviewed and just talking about how much she meant to them. And, you know, like, as you said, her daughter said her life has really, she feels like it's really been overshadowed by all the controversy and speculation surrounding her death. So to see how much she meant, as a mom to them was, it got really emotional for sure.
So I watched it twice. I watched it a couple weeks ago, and then I watched it again last night. And I was shocked the first time I saw it to see that Robert Wagner was going to do an interview and talk about it. And I have to say, after listening to the Fatal Voyage podcast a long time, 2 years ago, and I feel like I've read quite a bit about it, I've come to the conclusion now that it was just an accident, her death. Did you feel the same way?
No, it's just one of those situations that I think that have very, very few answers. I mean, he has been so insistent for years that he had nothing to do with it. I think I read that Christopher Walken like won't even talk about it anymore. And Robert Wagner, I was surprised also that he did such a long sit down interview, but you know, it's his stepdaughter. So, you know, I think that's why she obviously had so much access.
I was really taken by your article, and I loved how you put together five of the most interesting takeaways. And I was wondering if we could go through them. The first thing that you said was that Wood felt immense pressure as an actress. If you could give everybody a little bit more insight about that.
So I think one of the things I found really interesting about this was that the documentary talked a lot about her work as a child star and how she was really the primary breadwinner for her family. They all moved to Los Angeles when she started getting acting work, and her father actually worked in Hollywood as well, but then he got sick and he wasn't able to work anymore. So she really was the one earning money for her family. And it, you know, it talked about how her mother really, especially like put a lot of pressure on her to get roles and basically support her sister and her parents. But then even later, as she became a really successful adult actress, she had 3 Oscar nominations. But at that time, like the studio system in Hollywood, they said it was almost like a studio would own you. So her daughter talked a lot about how much pressure she felt through that and was really unhappy a lot of times. So, and even more so as she had kids and wanted to spend more time with them. So yeah, just through her whole life, acting brought her a lot of joy, but again, just like a lot of pressure as well.
And then one weekend she overdosed on sleeping pills, quickly sought medical assistance. After getting her stomach pumped at the hospital, she was back on set that Monday. Now, Natasha Gregson-Wagner says it wasn't a suicide attempt, but rather a cry for help. I felt like she may have just been scratching the surface with this stuff. And now with the Me Too movement, I have to wonder if a young actress at this time had much more happened to her that we will never know.
Yeah, I think that this film was definitely, like a love letter from her daughter to her mother. So she wanted to be truthful, but she also didn't want to get too much into, maybe stories that were difficult to talk about. So she did bring up, that incident where it was kind of after her divorce from Robert Wagner, when she married him the first time, and that contributed to it. She just felt very lonely. She said she didn't think her mother wanted to take her own life. She just realized after that she needed help, which she then got.
Okay. And then you said that Natalie Wood didn't mind talking about her multiple marriages to Wagner. She's pretty open about it. And at one point in the film, the film shows an archived interview clip in which a journalist, I think it was Dinah Shore, had asked her about marrying, divorcing, and then remarrying Robert Wagner. Did you get a sense that they had a true love affair, or do you think that the marriage at the point of her death was beyond repair?
The way they were talking about it, they sounded like they both really believed that they were meant to be together. And yeah, I thought that was just kind of a funny moment with that clip, because as a journalist, you kind of could feel awkward sometimes about asking people about such personal things. And he said, you know, if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But Natalie Wood was like, of course I'll talk about it. Like, I'm really happy that we're back together. And, you know, they talked pretty openly about the with clips that Natalie Wood had written and things Robert Wagner said. They were pretty open about their first marriage not really working. And then they both were married to other people. But when those didn't work out and they, you know, saw each other like at a party, they just kind of instantly reconnected. So, she had no problem talking about their journey, even if it was complicated, because it sounded like she was very happy when they reunited.
And also, I thought it was most helpful that she had involved so many of her really close friends into this film, that you even get a better sense of who she was as a person. And it shaped my understanding, or everyone's understanding, of the relationships that she had and what people believe. Like, at one point they talked with the director of the film that she was working on with Christopher Walken, and he said, there was zero chemistry between these two. I should know, because I was working on the film. And there's so many theories about whether or not they had been having an affair. And he just puts it into perspective. Like, it's not possible. I've been with them. It never happened. And also the friendships that she had, and realizing that she was so close to so many people. And it said so much about her as a person that all of these people 40 years later would want so badly to tell how wonderful she was. I thought it was really touching.
Yeah, I did not expect to see that many celebrities in the documentary, but there were so many people. Yeah, like Robert Redford and Mia Farrow and Elliot Gould, I believe, too. There was an interview with him, and like just so many people raving about how wonderful she was. And yeah, I also wasn't necessarily expecting that part of it, but I thought that was so fascinating how many just glowing things so many people had to say.
So in 1969, she marries producer Richard Gregson. Natasha was born the following year. 3 years after that, they split when Gregson had an affair with his secretary. Could not believe that. And Natalie Wood and Robert Wagner reconnected at a party in 1972 and were married once again. And then they had Courtney. I was fascinated to hear that after she had died, that Robert Wagner had taken the family to Europe to stay with her former husband, Richard Gregson, and his wife. And then it made me kind of rethink all these theories about how bad their marriage was and how he could have been involved with her death. Because if that were to be true, would all the people in her life love and accept him and support him the way that they seem to have done immediately after her death, and most certainly in the last 40 years?
Yeah, I think they really emphasized too that after she died and Robert Wagner was really devastated, eventually he kind of had to just get through that, because his kids were so devastated as well. And I think there was a line in there from their housekeeper who said that she had to go tell him, like, both of your daughters think that you're going to die too. Like, you have to pull through this and be there for them. So yeah, that was a big part of it as well, was just seeing how he was impacted, but then how he had to help his kids through this too.
And also that the stepsons from his first marriage were so close to not only him, but to Natalie as well. I mean, it just seemed like this woman, every relationship that she had was so strong, and she had a way of pulling in all of these exes and making people feel like family. It made me admire her so much. And the thought of her dying at 43 years old with three girls at home and stepsons is just so sad. You also said that she felt conflicted about working once she had children, something that I think all women can kind of understand. Of course, this is 40 years ago, I'm imagining what it's like to be a very famous, successful actress and you begin to age. The roles for women are certainly difficult to find at that age in 2020. What do you think it was like for her 40 years ago, having these children at home and still hoping to continue a career when it seems like those roles were few and far between?
It could seem, yeah, really, really difficult. And her daughters talked a lot about this too, how she truly was conflicted because she loved acting and she loved her work, but at the same time, she loved being a mom. And I think they said at one point, like, she felt like she couldn't do both and give both her all. Like, so she was really struggling with that. And that was, and that was something, even as they talked about the weekend that she died, that Catalina trip, that was something that was kind of like weighing heavily on her as she was going on that trip. And almost, and like I said, she was also very close to Robert Wagner's stepsons. And one of them even talked about trying to counsel her through this and saying, like, maybe you should go to Catalina and take a few days to think about it. And he still feels a lot of guilt for urging her to go on this trip.
Such a heartbreaker. And then also to hear that so many other friends were invited that weekend and how they felt terrible because ultimately they had decided at the last minute not to go. Now, a lot of people have said in the past 40 years that she was terrified of water and that it makes a plausible explanation for something bad happening on that boat. In other words, someone pushing her in the water. But a gypsy apparently had made a prophecy years and years before to her mother, who was very superstitious, that her second daughter would be famous, world famous, and to stay away from dark, murky waters. But Natalie, as we see, loved the water. She had a boat. They honeymooned in Catalina. So this whole idea that, like, she was forced to go on a boat is simply not true.
Yeah, Natasha had said something about that too, about how she was like, I grew up hearing this thing about how my mother was terrified of dark water. And she was like, but who likes dark water? Like, she seemed fine with water. Just, you know, that doesn't seem like something anyone would like. So she, yeah, almost seems to be kind of shooting that down, even though, yeah, I feel like that's been one of the biggest things surrounding her death was like, everyone knew she hated dark water, but her daughter seemed to question that.
Now, the other thing that I thought was interesting is that it seems like a lot of these theories have been spoken about by her sister, Lana. And in the documentary, Natasha makes it clear that they didn't really have much of a relationship with her mother's sister. And that made me wonder if a lot of those theories were pushed because she was frustrated about their relationship not being close and perhaps even about money that would have come after her death. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I've been kind of wondering throughout the documentary. I was like, I was pretty sure she had a sister and she like wasn't, they didn't bring her up at all. Barely until the very end when, yeah, you see Lana giving interviews saying that she thinks the investigation was mishandled and that it was a conspiracy involving Robert Wagner. And then Natasha was saying that they had really never been too close to her, that she would sometimes come to visit, but she would only really talk to Natalie. She wouldn't interact too much with the kids. So yeah, they kind of like briefly skated over that while at the same time, making sure to say that they were kind of horrified by the things she had said. And I think Natasha even said, you know, she basically accused my dad of murder. So like, no, we don't really have a relationship. So yeah, that was one thing I almost wish they'd gotten more into, but I can understand why they didn't.
I thought that one sentence was so interesting. Every time she came to my house, she was not interested in us. She was more interested in my mom. I felt like she was just trying to say, look, she wanted her money. She wanted her money. Like, we weren't important to her. And it was just like, so much was said in that one sentence.
Yeah, so I wish they had gotten more into it. Because that is, I think, a really interesting dynamic when, because Lana, you know, she's an actress too. And it's like when one sibling is an extremely famous movie star and the other is it. Like, I just would have been very interested in that. But again, it seemed like they just did not want to talk about her since she has, like, given all these interviews alluding to some sort of conspiracy.
I guess the one last thing that I thought was most interesting was you get the sense that she was ahead of her time in terms of the way she looked at roles, the way she approached acting. And it makes you wonder if she had lived and, it, you know, we're 40 years later, would she be the kind of woman that was like running a studio? And I think that that's the part that's also heartbreaking, not just the loss to her own family, but to the loss of the business and what she could have done to propel other actors, other women within the entertainment industry had she lived.
Yeah, that made me really sad too to think about, which was something I hadn't really before, but just seeing all these roles that she did have of these strong women, she wasn't afraid to tackle roles that involved mental health, which was kind of taboo at the time. Yeah, she really did seem ahead of her time, and it would have been amazing to see where she would go from there. So that, yeah, again, that was one aspect I hadn't really thought about, and it made me really sad considering.
Ugh, it was a heartbreaker. I cried my face off. Emily, I love your columns. I love your work. Tell everybody where they can continue to see what you think about different television shows and the industry at large.
Well, thank you. That's really nice of you to say. I'm on Twitter at Emily Yahr, Y-A-H-R. And I'm also just on the Washington Post site. You can find me there. And yeah, thank you so much. It was great to talk to you.
I want to thank my great guests this week, Ronnie Karam and Emily Yahr. I want to remind you to subscribe to the show, to leave a 5-star review on iTunes. You can join the Facebook group page, and you can talk about this episode. You can even submit some questions for Nima from Shaws of Sunset, and let me know what other guests you'd love to hear from. In fact, tell me what shows you're watching too, which would be great. My Twitter is at Kate Casey. I love to tweet during shows and about shows. And I will tell you this, if some of you are like, I don't know, why would I be on Twitter? I'll tell you why. It's not just about politics. Twitter is a great place when you're looking for people who are also watching shows. For example, I'm watching Last Dance on ESPN and I can't figure out why Michael Jordan has such yellow eyes. And I'm like, am I losing my mind? I go into Twitter, I do a search, and I find all these people at the same time are watching the show with me. And they're also wondering the same question. So it's little things like that. And then you find a friend and then you find out what they're watching, what they're thinking about. And it's fantastic. And you can also find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA. I want to see your Mother's Day pictures. If you have a spouse that gets you a lousy gift, if you find yourself in a room in a closet by yourself, the glass of wine, if you get a ridiculous gift, whatever it is, just tag me. I'm dying to see it. I just think Mother's Day in quarantine is just next level funny. I'm wishing you guys a great weekend, and I'll circle back with you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.